afternoon, everyone. Welcome to CSIS. I think we're having a number of people who will come in as we talk, but let's please go ahead and get started. My name is Johanna Nesseth, and I am Vice President for Strategic Planning at CSIS, and I also head up our Food Security Task Force that's been underway for about a year now. And we're delighted to welcome Dr. Monty Jones today to CSIS. I think you all know he's the head of the Forum for Agricultural Research in Africa. Very, very distinguished gentleman, and he has a list of accomplishments that's lengthy, but I think you all know he was a World Food Prize recipient about 5 years ago now. He was named one of Time's 100 most influential people, and he is actually a rice breeder, someone who spent a lot of time looking at plants and dirt and thinking about ways to help increase productivity in Africa, and has a very, very interesting and compelling story to tell about the importance of research to building productivity in Africa. Now, Dr. Jones serves on the board of AGRA, the Alliance for Green Revolution in Africa, and he's a native of Sierra Leone. And I actually have to note that he's been very generous to join us during his vacation. We've been stealing time from his family, who we also welcome today, in order to share some thoughts both about the importance of ag research and also about ways in which the new Global Food Security Initiative that the Obama administration has been talking about can intersect with African centers and can build up productivity and food security throughout Africa. I do want to make a special note to thank the folks who have been involved with our Task Force on Food Security. A number of them are here today. They've given very generously of their time and ideas. Julie Howard, I do want to thank you of the Partnership to Cut Hunger in Africa for introducing us to Dr. Jones and a number of other people. Just a few words about our work at CSIS on food security. As most of you know, we tend to be focused on foreign policy and security policy and led a major initiative about 2 years ago on the use of smart power and ways that the U.S. can use both hard power and soft power to improve our image abroad and be more effective in our outreach to other countries. About a year and a half ago, during the height of the global food crisis, we felt that agricultural technology and, at that time, food aid and assistance and U.S. leadership were important tools to bring to this issue. And we put together a task force at that time led by Senators Casey and Lugar. We put out a brief report just about a year ago now on some short-term recommendations for the U.S. government to approach the global food crisis and help to mitigate that. And we're now in the midst of a longer-term effort looking at sort of longer-term agricultural development issues, especially around raising productivity, ag research and development, and the role of trade in food security. And we will be putting together some recommendations over the next couple of months on that. And in addition to Senators Lugar and Casey, Congresswoman McCollum is also helping us to head up this effort. So we have time today, and I thank you for coming on a hot August afternoon when a lot of you probably are thinking about heading off on vacation. We have time today to hear from Dr. Jones with his comments and his sort of recommendations for the potential for win-win partnerships between the U.S. initiative and African centers, and also to have a discussion with all of you and take a number of questions from you. So thank you again for joining us, and I'll invite Dr. Jones to join us at the podium.
Thank you very much. Actually, this is a great pleasure and an honor for me to be here today. And I would actually like to thank the CSIS for giving Farah this opportunity. And I must say that I am delighted to be delivering this brief presentation to you on behalf of the Forum for Agricultural Research in Africa. I think the topic for my discussion this afternoon is harnessing the spirit of L'Aquila to improve agricultural productivity in Africa. And to start off, I would like to say that actually African economic performance have not been very good in the past several decades. You know, actually the GDP per capita, you know, have been very, very slow during this period. You know, it's actually less than one during the 70s, and in the 80s, it's negative through to early 90s. And in the last decade or so, beginning in 2000, in the year 2000, we've seen a surge in the GDP per capita of Africa, you know, and we've been able to sustain that improvement, you know, to a level of something like 4.5%, you know, which is really very high. So probably what we are seeing is a break from decades of stagnation in our economic performance in Africa. However, I believe that Africa has still got a long way to go to catch up with lost grounds. For example, during the period of stagnation, we saw Africa's share in the world trade decline from 3.5% in 1960 to 1.5% today, with an equivalent loss of something like $70 billion annually. And this is three times the ODA that Africa receives. You know, and also looking at population growth in Africa, our population growth is growing much faster than our food production growth rate. So that between 1961 and 2005, cereal yields in Africa increased a little bit by 29% compared to something like 177% for Asia and 144% for Latin America. And during the same period in question, you know, Africa's population grew by something like 216%. The implication of this is that Africa moved from a net food exporter to a net food importer. And so it's not surprising today that Africa imports something like 25% of its food. And the increased GDP per capita that I mentioned over a 10-year period have not had significant impact on levels of poverty. Poverty remains very high in Africa, and if we look at the decrease in poverty, it's very minimal. Something like, it moves from something like 46.8% in 1990 to 41.1% in 2004. And at this rate, nothing short of revolutionary interventions will enable Africa to attain the Millennium Development Goal. To review, and that is the goal number one that calls for all nations in the world to reduce poverty by half by the year 2015. But we in Africa believe that agriculture is the backbone to economic growth. And in fact, there is the general saying that agriculture is the leg on which Africa stands. And I agree to that saying, but go further to say it's not just the leg on which Africa stands, but it's the leg on which Africa moves forward in terms of development. And I'm saying that because agriculture continues to play a dominant role in economic activities of sub-Saharan Africa in particular, so much so that today agriculture provides 62% of the working population in Africa, and it also contributes something like 27% of our GDP, you know, and in some countries this goes up to something like 35%. Also, higher agricultural productivity is a precondition for growth and development in several African countries, particularly those in sub-Saharan Africa. And studies carried out by the World Bank shows that for every increase by 1% of cereals could lift 2 million Africans out of poverty. And so we see that agriculture is a key player that could lift up, reduce poverty in Africa. But agriculture, like I mentioned, have not been doing very well. And what have we in Africa been doing to reform our agricultural system? I would say that at the beginning of the 2000 era, our political leaders came together and decided to take the lead in driving the development process through the creation of NEPAD, the New Partnership for Africa's Development. And NEPAD, in turn, realizing the importance of agriculture, decided to develop the CADEP, the Comprehensive African Agricultural Development Program, a document that outlines the strategies and the goals and objectives for agricultural development in the continent. It's a continental framework that would refocus attention to agriculture as the engine for economic growth. And the CADEP recognized the vision for African agricultural development that each country should attain 6% agricultural production growth rate. And at that level, there are certain objectives that have been spelled out that we need to achieve. That we should develop dynamic markets between countries, between sub-regions, and between the continent and the international community. That Africa should make every effort so that countries will become net exporter of agricultural product. That we should ensure that food is available or affordable. And that Africa should play a strategic role in science and in global science and technology. And that Africa should do everything to conserve its rich natural resource base. These are very important objectives, and I believe that you will see that 2015 is only about 6-7 years from now, and this is going to be a daunting task for Africa to achieve these objectives at that time. So, but the CADEP also spells out how to make intervention, and it calls for intervention in 4 key pillars. Pillar 1 is land and water management. Pillar 2 is infrastructural development and market access. Pillar 3 is increasing food supply and reducing hunger. And pillar 4 is agricultural research technology dissemination and adoption. There is a cross-cutting theme on capacity strengthening, or themes on capacity strengthening and information, access to information. Now, the CADEP actions are planned, implemented, and evaluated at national, sub-regional, and continental levels by the 53 countries in Africa, by the regional economic communities in each of the sub-regions in Africa, and by the AU, the African Union, and NEPAD at continental level. But planning and implementation for Pillar 4, which relates to agricultural research, technology dissemination, and adoption, is carried out by the 53 national programs, by sub-regional research organizations. These are umbrella organizations coordinating and facilitating agricultural research and development in their respective sub-regions, and then at the continental level by my institution, FARA, which is the Forum for Agricultural Research. And we sort of bring continental perspectives and connect the various sub-regions. And through the various sub-regions, link up to the 53 countries. And when we get to the countries, we're talking of NAS systems, research, extension, NGOs, general civil society group, including the private sector. And again, CADEP calls for achievement of 6% agricultural production growth rate, which should translate into something like 4.4% total factor productivity. And here we're looking at land productivity, human resource productivity, and capital productivity. So we have a mechanism in place to drive agricultural development. And question that I want to pose is, why should the U.S. be interested in Africa's agricultural development? I think I would like to give some reasons for that, my own view. And I think that global food insecurity is bad for all, because food insecurity results to civil wars, civil unrest. It results to emigration. And in extreme cases, it predisposes some people to extreme ideology. And we might look at piracy in Sudan as one of such extreme cases, and poppy growing in Afghanistan. So that's one reason why I believe that each country should be interested to ensure food security in other countries. The second reason is that we have in Africa the Congo Basin, which is the world's second long, because 15% of the world forests is in Africa, and we know that conversion of these forests into agricultural land is the common way of attaining deforestation. And deforestation globally accounts for something like 20 to 25% of carbon dioxide emission, more than all planes, cars, ships, trains put together. You know, and so in effect, if we don't control the forests, it will aggravate the problem of climate change. And we know that climate change results to a range of problems that we have to solve, you know, if we should boost up agricultural activities. A third reason why I believe that the U.S. should be interested in African agricultural development is because Africa has the world's most important reservoir of biodiversity. And we see that increasing yields or production through increase in the area under cultivation would destroy this biodiversity. And Africa's biodiversity have got some special species, some medicinal plants that everybody, all scientists worldwide are interested in, including scientists working in the USA. The fourth reason relates to the fact that Africa is demographically the youngest continent. Survey carried out in 2006 showed that 44% of Africans are under the age of 15. So Africa has the youngest population worldwide. This could be an advantage, could create an opportunity, or it could create risk. The advantage is that Africa should be able, by a protected period, to have young, active people that should be able to contribute to the development process. And the risk is when these people do not receive the required knowledge and education to contribute to the development process, but rather becomes troublemakers. So, in effect, basically what I'm saying is that if we train our young stars properly, they should become citizens that will contribute to the development process, not only of Africa, but also of the world. And I believe that wherever we are, as Africans should be able to contribute to their country's development. So, after mentioning this, what are the opportunities for international collaboration with Africa? In recent years, we have seen improvement in governance in Africa. We have seen sustained stability in a number of countries in the continent. And I believe that this creates the necessary environment and provide increased attractiveness, you know, for collaborative engagement with Africa, especially with the private sector. And I should recall that recently President Barack Obama visited Africa and spoke from Ghana to the African people and call for all development assistance to be matched by good governance. Africa is beginning to get there in terms of good governance, in terms of stability. We hear very minimal number of civil wars compared to the 60s and to the 70s. You know, and again, another reason, opportunity relates to the food price crisis, which I believe broke the complacency and now is turning attention to the need for increased agricultural activities and turning attention to the need for increased agricultural production. So Africa needs to grow and produce more food to meet the increasing demand of its population, to meet the demand of the wealthy people that I imagine in various countries in Africa. And with only 28% of our cultivable land under cultivation today, Africa is the region where the biggest gains in food production can be realized. We have bowls of very good production areas where we can produce enough food to feed Africans, or to feed Africa, and enough food that probably should go out to other parts of the world. And I believe that this is a clear opportunity for collaboration. The G8 recently pledged to support Africa and other food insecure regions of the world. And in that pledge, they made available, they promised to make available a total amount of $20 billion to support food security programs in these developing regions. And I think that this is a big opportunity for collaboration between Africa and the U.S. The G8 commitment at L'Aquila in Italy, I believe, is something that all of us should look at with seriousness, because they made very serious commitments to act on the scale and urgency needed to achieve sustainable global food security. They promised to coordinate and to support country-owned processes and plans for agricultural development. They promised to support actions that will increase agricultural productivity, stimulate pre- and post-harvest interventions, emphasize private sector growth, smallholders, women, natural resource management, knowledge and training, trade, good governance, and policy reforms. So they made all this support, all these pledges, and I think that it calls for all nations in the developing world, you know, to tighten their belts and to do everything, take this opportunity to increase food security in their respective countries, reduce poverty. And so the question now is, what are we in Africa doing to increase agricultural productivity? And I'm going to address this in four areas. And the first relates to approaches for improving farm productivity. And here, research institutions in Africa are collaborating very strongly with international institutions, the CGIAR, that is the Consultative Group for International Agricultural Research, with advanced research institutions and universities in the West. And over the years, we've come up with high and stable yielding varieties and breeds, animal breeds, varieties with improved level of resistance or tolerance to some of the key stresses that hinders agricultural development. And to mention a few of these varieties, we have Nerica rice, we have tissue culture banana, maize varieties, cassava, yam, dairy cow, and then horticulture and cotton. In the area of natural resource management, we've come up with packages. One that I would like to mention relates to an innovation that stems out of farmers' collaboration, We talk of scientist innovation, we talk of farmers innovation, and this is the Zypeat cultivation methods developed by farmers, and it's used to cultivate a crop in the Sahel zone in particular, in gravelly Sahel zone. And of course, coupled with other approaches related to fertilizer micro-dosing. And basically what we're seeing is that even some areas of the Sahel are slowly becoming green again. And I'm pleased to note that the Time magazine captured this story, these developments, the New York Times, captured this story, I believe, in 2007. In the area of integrated pest management, we are putting packages in place. But I would like to explain one incident that I thought could have been averted if we had acted fast enough. It would have cost just $27 million to arm about one quarter of the Nigerian farmers with micro-dosing approaches. They did not. And then there was famine in southern Niger in the Maradi region. And eventually, it cost us, including support that came from the U.S., something in the region of $80 million, you know, as food aid to southern Niger. It also cost the government of Niger, I believe, something in the order of $70 million, you know, to lower costs of commodities, you know, for the consumers. Again, in the area of post-harvest losses, I believe that we're trying to put some packages in place and policy issues. We need to create a necessary environment, you know, for all parties across the board to undertake their work. And there are good policies, there are bad policies. I think a good policy is the subsidies on fertilizers, you know, through issue of coupons to farmer in Malawi that resulted to bumper harvest of crop for several years now. And bad policy is the land policy issue of Zimbabwe. And again, another good policy is the water use policy of Egypt. I wouldn't want to go into details on that. But I would like to say that in my introduction, it was stated that I developed, in collaboration with other colleagues, of course, developed the Nerica rice. I'm talking of approaches for improving farm productivity. Nerica is one of such technologies that should improve farm productivity, because it not only does it combine the important traits of the Asian indigenous species of rice and the African indigenous species of rice, and actually there are these two cultivated species, the high yield potential of the Asian type is combined with the adaptation of the African indigenous species. Adaptation here refers to ability to suppress weeds, higher level of resistance or tolerance to some of the major stresses encountered in African rice production. And this significantly increased the yields of the yield ceiling of rice. And today, farmers can realize increase in yield from an average of 1 ton to yields level of up to about 2 to 2.5 tons per hectare in traditional cultivation systems, where there's little or no use of external inputs, including fertilizer. But in improved management system, such yield can get up to about 5 tons per hectare. And Nerica reduces the risk of famine because of its higher level of resistance or tolerance to major stresses such as drought, such as acidity and insect pests and diseases. And it also enhances labor productivity because of its ability to suppress weeds less times, and each time much less weed than you would have weeded under normal using other varieties. And at the same time, we reduce the duration. Traditional varieties can go up to about 5 months 4 to 5 months in Africa. And Nerica rice matures in 90 days, you know, from seed to seed. This is just to give you an example of what we can do to increase production. Today, Nerica rice is cultivated in 250,000 hectares in Africa, and a number of countries are beginning to realize increased income due to increased yields from Nericas. But the second point approach that I would like to talk about relates to approaches for improving capital productivity in Africa. Credit is major input for production. Credit is not readily available to majority of the farmers in Africa. But we see microfinancing institutions coming up in various countries in Africa. And I think that these companies, some of them, requires capacity strengthening for them to be able to function effectively and efficiently. But AGRA today, the Alliance for a Green Revolution in Africa, you know, is testing a model of rural credit, you know, involving farmers, farmers organizations, financial institutions, and other commercial banks and other financial institutions. The third is approaches for improving human and institutional capacity. Insufficient human and institutional capacity is a key critical constraint to increased agricultural development in Africa. There are weaknesses, lots of weaknesses. For example, the youth doesn't want to get into agriculture. And we need capacity to produce problem solvers and entrepreneurs, you know, so that they have skills that will match the demand of the people. And we need to develop capacity to retain the best professionals in agriculture and of course, in Africa. And our institution, my institution, FARA, is promoting a capacity strengthening effort, projects that we call SCADA, Strengthening Capacity for Agricultural Research and Development in Africa, aimed at strengthening capacity of institutions, key institutions that will develop to become centers of excellence. You know, but it's also this project also aimed at improving Africa's capacity to develop, to build capacity. And the fourth relates to approaches for improving capacity for agricultural innovations. And here I would like to say that for 50 years in our agricultural development process, we concentrated on the linear approach to technology generation, dissemination, and adoption, where you have various bodies working in isolation, research, develop the technology, pass it on to extension. Extension is supposed to take it on to the farmers. Extension is very weak, so technologies remain in the shelves. You know, and now we are preaching the innovation systems approach to technology generation, dissemination, and adoption that brings all entities along the value chain, research, extension, NGO, marketeers, the middlemen, the consumption, the consumers, the private sector, policymakers, all should come together to conceive the problem, to develop the protocol, and to implement the protocol. This sort of arrangement calls for evolution and reform of agricultural institutions and services in the continent, with a view to strengthening research, extension, training, education, but most importantly, to empower the end users, the farmers themselves, so that their voices could be heard in agricultural research activities. Our female, our wives, our sisters are the people that are involved mostly in agricultural production activities in Africa, but they are the least underrepresented when it comes to science and technology, when it comes to research and all of this. These should be empowered to participate effectively and to contribute to the development program. Also, under this approach, we are calling for increasing the scale of Africa's investments in agricultural research. And we're also calling for harmonization of support. Too often, so many donors are supporting too many activities, and there are lots of duplications out there. And we need to reduce that duplication. So what are the priorities? The priority win-win US-Africa partnership. We should collaborate in science. Science is the key to the generation of technologies. And we should collaborate by building on models that have shown promise, that have shown success, that have been successful in the past. And I can go on and list a number of projects being run by USAID and other institutions in the US in Africa that are successful model that we could build on. USAID supported commodity networking, you know, among researchers and institutions in Africa. They're supporting the collaborative research support program and other programs. Today we've developed relationship between Africa and the US on higher education. And these are models that we could build on. And we've developed this with the Partnership to Cut Hunger in Africa and Nostalgic. Again, a second area that we want to look at is related to food aid. US is very generous. They give a lot of aid to Africa and to other developing regions of the world. But we would like to see this food aid linked on to domestic, increase in domestic production. We don't want to give aid so that the African farmers become lazy. We're getting food, so we don't go into production. It should be connected somehow so that they increase domestic production and so that they become less and less dependent on food aid and produce to feed themselves. And again, we need to address the issue of farm subsidies. Very important. I talked of the Malawi subsidizing fertilizers. But we need to address this so that consumers can benefit from application of comparative advantages. And again, we need to expand collaboration between universities, to promote tools, modern tools, to promote approaches and methodologies, you know, that would allow the benefits to spread to a whole cohort of students rather than to few students. And I'm talking of modern technology should allow for distance education, should allow for open education. And so we should be able to pass on the information to a range of university students in different corners of Africa. And another area is support to the development of trade-related infrastructural support. Open up trade corridors and develop strategies that will promote the participation of smallholder farmers and pastoralists in community, in domestic, in regional and international markets. Because a prosperous Africa is a good market for US high-value product. Ladies and gentlemen, I can go on and talk, but one key issue that I think that I should mention before I conclude, if I do have some 2 or 3 minutes, is related to how we see what should Africa do, you know, in the area of research to promote increased agricultural productivity. I talked about it, but I just want to emphasize one issue that I have mentioned that we need to increase productivity. We have mentioned that we need to reduce post-harvest losses. Africa should be able to produce food to feed itself. And this is very major. It's the first trust. And this is essential for our stability. At the same time, we've seen the triple F's crisis, the food price crisis, the fuel crisis, and the financial crisis, which is done in Africa. But let's look at how this is affecting development in Africa. And let's look at the issue of climate change and how we should address that. Climate change is a reality. And I think that the food price crisis is an eye-opener that Africa should do everything to increase domestic production. Because during that crisis, some countries stopped exporting to Africa. So we must develop our own food. We must produce our own food. And to be able to do that, we have to address some of these key problems. Climate change is a reality today. And I believe that to be able to address climate change, we need to come up with new varieties. We need to come up with new management practices. We need to put all of these packages together so that they are able to withstand the new environment that climate change is creating for us. Which means, in terms of varieties, we need to come up with varieties with higher level of resistance or tolerance to some of the key stresses that we encounter in the region. And after saying all of this, we need to increase competitiveness of our agriculture. Africa needs to improve quality so that of its product so that they can sell into the international markets. They need to improve quality so that they can have intra-African trade to develop intra-African markets. Africa needs to identify its niche product, its niche technologies that could go for export, that for which we can add value at the farm gate. You know, so having said this, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to conclude by saying that Africa is making progress in its agricultural development. We have developed the CADEP. CADEP have come up with a target of attaining 6% agricultural production growth rate on average. That has its own objectives that we need to achieve. And there's the Millennium Development Goals that we need to attain, again, in 2015. But all of these changes requires us to be very serious about implementing the common agenda as outlined in the CADEP and the targets that we need to meet, 6% agricultural production growth rate, the MDGs. All of these calls for revolutionary vision, commitment, investment, and action. And I think that the roadmap to achieving these targets have been developed. CADEP is there. The Framework for African Agricultural Productivity, the FAP, is there. We have all of these mechanisms, all of these framework. What we do need from you, the USA, is support, encouragement, partnership, and inspiration to implement these activities that we ourselves have put together. And I will just finally say that I come from Africa, and the people of Africa and the stakeholders of the Forum for Agricultural Research in Africa, my institution, FARA, applaud the United States of America for its significant contribution to the L'Aquila resolution during the last G8 meeting. And we want to thank all those institutions that played advocacy to realize this. I'm not going to mention all, but I'm going to mention the Partnership to Cut Hunger in Africa, the USAID, the Columbia University Arts Institution. All of these played a major role. And we in Africa are very grateful, and I think that the resolutions that we got from L'Aquila is telling all of us that we need to come together. No country can stand in isolation. We need each other at this critical period. And with the support that we're getting from the G8, from the G20, you know, we at Africa stretch our arms to you for collaboration and support to increase agricultural productivity in Africa. We believe that this is the key to improving, to create the necessary developmental impact that will improve the well-being of the African people, the majority of which are in agriculture in farming, the well-being of the resource poor farmers that are out there, to reduce poverty and food insecurity in Africa. Thank you very much.
Dr. Jones, thank you for your time today and your thoughts. You've laid out some very compelling reasons for the United States to care about reinvigorating our approach to agricultural development and our commitment to ag development in Africa in particular. And we've had a chance to talk about a number of areas, but one thing I wanted to ask you to comment on before we maybe go to broader questions is this issue of sort of the future agricultural technology workforce that you've talked about. One of the major components of some of the U.S. plans and legislation that are moving through is an effort to increase educational exchanges, extension activities, and all of these different elements that will raise the level of productivity of research. But I take your point very clearly that the number of people even applying for agricultural programs at universities is very, very low. And if farming is sort of a backbreaking kind of work that people want to get out of, they'd rather be in accounting or some other program. What are some of the approaches that you've taken to or that you think that we should emphasize in terms of increasing the number of people who are looking at agriculture and agronomy as, you know, a future work choice and a work choice for Africa and not for leaving and coming to the U.S. or to another country?
Yeah. And this is a very important question, one that is dear to us in Africa, and we're trying to see how we can answer to some of the problems that we do encounter in this particular area. A continent where 60% or so of its people are engaged in agricultural activities. And then a continent where these people and more, probably up to 80%, derive their livelihood and food security from agricultural activities. And then we find the youth not wanting to go into taking agricultural courses. I think that is really very serious. But I think that over the years, like I mentioned earlier on today, we have created fear in the minds of the people, the African youths, because too often in African schools, secondary schools, primary schools, even in universities to some extent, in colleges, you know, if you are to be punished for not doing your turning in your assignment, you are sent to work in the farms, you know. So that fear is there. And the question is, how do we get rid of that kind of fear? But having said that, I think the key question is, how do we make agriculture attractive so that the youth will stay? It's a dirty job. It's not a white-collar job. You dirty your fingers. You run into problems. And in fact, if you look at the production systems in Africa, mango swamp, for example, the mud can come up to your knee, and there's no way you can go into that kind of mud with your boots and things like that. So it is very difficult. To some extent, the increase in food prices helps, you know, to pay attention to agriculture, to get some people to go into agriculture. And I think that what we need to do is to talk to our youth, from primary school to secondary schools to universities, and try to let them know that this is a noble career. Educate them to know that it's a noble career because you are producing food not just for yourself, but for your community, for your country. You are sustaining the lives of people, you know. And I think that we shouldn't see it as a dirty job. If we improve the farming systems, if we move away from subsistence farming where you produce mainly to eat, but even at that subsistence level, we try to link production to markets, you know, so that the farmers will earn income, and that income will be used to improve their well-being. Because I have seen it happen. I talked of Nerica rice. We took Nerica rice to some villages in different countries in Africa. And those people who cultivated Nerica got bumper harvests. The next day, they became seed growers. And next day, they were exporting seeds to neighboring cities and then to neighboring countries. Not to far from the time that they started to work as seed growers, they had televisions in their houses, and in the evening, villagers from other houses would come to sit in their houses to watch television. And even people, old people that have said, oh, I've given up planting, went back when they saw the yields that you're getting. So it's the incentive that we create attached to it that we get our youth to want to stay. And this idea of wanting to go out to look for greener pastures out there, I think Africans are very patriotic people. You know, if you provide that means, give them the knowledge, give them the tools, people will want to stay. And once people see that, yes, there is profit in that exercise, they will want to stay. And I think that what we need to do is to provide the means by making sure that the knowledge gets to the farmer, by making sure that the information gets to the farmer. And I come back to what I said earlier on this morning of, you know, building knowledge centers, creating the necessary linkages so that farmers should know that if they want to ask any question, they'll be able to get answers to those questions. So the knowledge centers should be linked to those farmers. And I made like that because I believe that we will be able to achieve this through cell phone, but with training, so that the farmer, who may not be able to read, but who should be able to listen, will be able to ask questions, will be able to receive answers. And so this is an approach that I think that we need to look into. We have started this in a small way. Kenya is promoting this. Benin and Senegal are promoting this, and it seems to be working very well, you know. So just create that necessary incentive, provide the means, and build knowledge. And I believe that the youth will see that it's a noble, in fact, they know that it's a noble institution, it's a noble career. You'll begin to go back into farming.
Great, that's a very helpful insight. And I want to open now to the floor. Let's take two or three questions, and then we'll come back right here in the middle, in the gray suit. And please just note your name and your affiliation.
Thank you, Dr. Jones. I'm Leon Weintraub, formerly of the U.S. Foreign Service, right now the head of the University of Wisconsin-Washington Semester in International Affairs. I would have to accept everything you say. I could not disagree with anything you said, but let me make just two small points about that. Number one, I think we've all heard this before. I can remember almost 40 years ago in your country, Sierra Leone, a very successful example of what you spoke about earlier. USAID sponsored with the University of Illinois in Jolly University. Very successful agricultural University. We've also had, for a very long time, in Nigeria, the International Institute of Tropical Agriculture in Ibadan. So we've had all kinds of external efforts at collaboration. 40 years ago or more, what's different now that we didn't have then? And second, and somewhat related, I'd like to ask you, how do we avoid what I call, for lack of a better term, the Nigeria syndrome, where you have a country that 35, 40, 45 years ago was a very successful agricultural exporter, ground nuts, palm kernels, other commodities, very successful, and then once they found the blessing of oil, or the curse of oil, the agricultural sector went into a steep decline. Now, obviously, we don't want African countries like Angola or other oil exporters to ignore these natural resources if they're there, but how do we avoid what happened in Nigeria?
It's right in the front here.
I'm Mohammed Kassim. Probably the only farmer from Africa in this room. I had 16,000 hectares in Zambia in the 70s. My family also had farms, tea and coffee estates in East Africa, which Nyerere stole. Inappropriate bank policies in Zambia messed up my farms. But I was a good farmer. I was good to my peasants, the women around me. I think what you've got to study is the disasters that have occurred in the 70s and 80s. Those disasters drove me out of Africa, and I had to join the working classes, so I can join the working classes here, with the World Bank. So be very careful about any aid going out, because, as my friend from Wisconsin will say, a lot of this aid is from 10 American pockets to one American pocket, minimum leakages, technical or capital. So I think that's one thing for a really good look at it, is what is it, what are the success stories in Africa? And Africa is huge. And what works in Zambia, I'm not sure, will never work in Nigeria. You know, but in the end, it's what are the incentives to the peasant families? What is the support you give them? And as he says, all this has been talked about for the last 40 years. Mm-hmm. And I think this, where are we? Why did we achieve it?
Great. And one more question. Woman in the middle with a gray suit.
Hi, my name is Janessa Jordan. I work at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. And Dr. Jones, thank you so much for your presentation. Specifically, what you focused on research, the economics, production, and security issues, I think that was very important. One thing I'd like for you to additionally comment on is actually the connections and activities to address and integrate issues of nutrition, micronutrient deficiencies, and really food safety issues. Particularly the research and work you're going to be doing in FARA, and then additionally your recommendations for country plans and national frameworks and integration with the U.S. Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All of these are very good comments and questions. And I think you touched on two countries that I believe, possibly because of the natural resources, mineral resources, if I should put it that way, somehow things did not work out very well. Sierra Leone is known for its diamonds. Nigeria is known for its oil. And these are two mineral that should be able to bring in enough resources, enough funds that should go into boosting other sectors, including agriculture. Unfortunately, it did not work very well in these two countries. But in the case of Sierra Leone, with regards to Njala University, and by the way, I should mention that I am a product of Njala University. I did my BSc in Agriculture General at Njala, so I know the system very, very well. And while I was there, the land grant system was functioning very well. But that is the problem that we've been talking about. You come with a project, the project comes with a lot of resources, and we do not build in sustainability mechanism for that project. At the end of the project, almost everything collapses, you know, because the sustainability is not there. At the end of the project, who supports those key activities that have been developed? You know, and that is one of the issue that I think resulted to the fall of Njala, apart from the civil war, because Njala was actually going down even before the civil war came up. You know, and apart from that, the skilled manpower that was supposed to take over the projects, the program, were being developed. Njala had a number of lecturers and assistant lecturers, few professors, but probably not enough, you know, to push the program going, except apart from the fact that there were not enough resources, you know, that were getting into that program. And moreover, there is no model that you can take and then you plant it and then you expect it to function. I think you need to look around to see what are the key taboos, you know, what are the key issues that would need to be modified for that model to succeed. You may not need to change the model substantially, but you need to take the capacity of the people around, the capacity of that institution into consideration in remodeling that approach so that it fits very well. And this is why we are saying that if we go for support, if we go to develop a program with any institution in a given country, in a given location within that country, I think we need to look to see and make those modifications that we believe will allow for sustainability of that program, that will enable that model to function in that area where it's is being promoted. The case of Nigeria is a very sad one because Nigeria had all the resources, and I think that I don't know if I want to go into the details of why it did not work in Nigeria. But I think, like in most at that time, probably things are improving now, but in most African countries, poor organization, dedication to the system, corruption and all of these things played a role not to allow Nigeria to continue to flourish. Nigeria has got the resources. Nigeria can support its agricultural program 10 times over from the resources that it's getting from oil production. And oil is a bulky thing. It's not as small as diamonds that you can place in a flask and then you take it across the border from diamond producing area in Sierra Leone to Liberia. I think we all know what is happening with Charles Taylor, etc. But Nigeria, this is a bulky commodity and very expensive and can bring in additional resources. I think it's got to do with mismanagement and less dedication, you know, to the system. But this is why whatever mechanism that we try to put in place to develop agriculture in any African countries, we have to put strict measures that will allow for the resources to go into the project that it's meant for. Resources coming from all angles, whether from development partners or from the government. You know, these are measures that I think that we need to look at and put in place. And I totally agree with you that we need to highlight success stories. There are technologies that have proven themselves. Africa is recognized for producing the Rinderpest vaccine. Otherwise, probably cattle herds will not be there today. The Rinderpest vaccine is a vaccine that is administered, you know, in cold conditions. It has to be freezing cold to take the vaccine to inseminate them on the cows. And we were able to take this rinderpest vaccine to the remotest village that you can think of in Africa, so much so that today rinderpest disease is eradicated. This vaccine went round, except for a small corner in Sudan. It's no longer there. We successfully, through integrated effort between medical doctors and researchers and extension workers, this vaccine went around and we've succeeded in eradicating it in Africa. That is one success story. Other success story is the cassava mealybug resistant material, and of course the Rica rice, etc., etc. What we need to do, I believe, is to put our acts together, come up with measures that will allow for dissemination of these technologies to the people that require those technologies. And it comes down to what I said earlier on about making sure that we promote knowledge-driven development program by providing necessary information, you know, to the people that require those information, so that we do not create these islands of success, you know, which we sometimes find in our agricultural system today. And I believe that we've learned our lessons. If you look at Nigeria today, a lot of stringent measures are being taken to make sure that, and Sierra Leone and other countries in Africa, to make sure that it's not perfect, but to try to ensure that the technology gets to the people that require those technology, to try to ensure that we function effectively, you know, by reducing corruption. And there are measures that are being taken in a number of countries to address these issues. But I totally agree with you that Africa would have, if we were exporting in the 60s, where did we get in this situation where we are losing out across board? Even our trade with the international community has gone down considerably, to the tune that we are losing $70 billion annually, you know, and these are resources that should have come to Africa. And the second, or the last, is it the second one on disasters of the 70? And I've talked about some of the success stories that you mentioned. But again, I think that disasters in the 70s are there. Disasters in the 2000 era are there. I think that I've mentioned it about climate change and the fact that climate change... Yeah, that's true. It's I agree with you there that the incentives sometimes are not there, and sometimes obligations are not met, you know. And I believe that, and I mentioned it this morning, that probably what we need to do is to create these incentives, you know, so that farmers are paid for their product, so that the middlemen do not go to rob the farmers of their product, because if you're supposed to pay $10 and you pay them $2, you're actually robbing the farmers of their income. And I think that these are policy issues that we need to address. And I believe that I have participated in one or two Council of Ministers of Agriculture meeting, Council of Ministers of Finance meeting, and I think that governments are quite aware of some of these problems, and some countries are taking measures to address these problems. Countries like Rwanda is not doing badly, you know, when it comes to supporting agriculture and supporting structures, you know, that will help to promote agricultural development in that country. To some extent, South Africa is not doing badly. Namibia is not doing badly. Egypt is not doing badly. So we have countries from which we have good models that seems to be working. Other countries, they don't seem to be working that well, you know. But I totally agree with you that the policies need to be put in place and enforced, you know, so that we get these incentives getting down to the people that would require them. And again, there was a question about what's the third question again?
Micronutrients.
The issue of nutrition. Yes, nutrition is very important. I think that as we look at food security, and I agree with you, I didn't talk much about it in my presentation. We have to look at nutrition security as well. And I am sure that you are aware of the work of A-Harvest in Africa, which is to augment the nutritional value of some key commodities. These are staple crops in Africa, sorghum, millet inclusive, you know. You see, and I think that is a very good move. Quality protein maize is another one, you know. So this awareness is there, and we are trying to put structures in place to be able to promote this. We actually at Pharma level also promote this to particular subjects, to our constituents, you know, so that they should take them into consideration in our development program. You know, so I agree with you that it's an issue that needs to be addressed. And I think that some institutions, universities, and centers of excellence are beginning to address nutrition security issues, you know, mainly to incorporate micronutrients and vitamins, etc., you know, into promising, starting with what I would say staple food crops, you know, sorghum, millet, rice. And this is the problem that we do have in Africa as well. The fact that if you go to Asia, it's mainly rice. But you come to Africa, there are about 12 staples out there. You know, but I believe that's quite a good number of these staples are being addressed with regards to augmenting their nutritional value. And if you consider that the food is not quite enough and that if we need to promote child survival, we need to improve this level of these micronutrients and vitamins in our crop, you know, so that in cases where our children will only eat rice and a small amount of fish as their main food for the day, they will be able to maintain a balanced, to get a balanced diet, you know. So it's an issue which is very primary, and we're not forgetting that at all.
Let's take another round of questions. Man in the white shirt, back middle.
Peter Coharris, I'm a principal of an international law and consulting firm. I wonder what role do you envision for the following two things. First, agribusiness, both foreign-owned and domestically-owned agribusiness, and secondly, genetically modified foods. Thank you.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Back middle.
Hi, my name is Nana Thembende. I am with CSIS Africa Program. And my question is, recently there is this kind of phenomenon where multinational corporations go into Africa, a particular country, they bought the land without the people's consent. So the land is sold by the government because people have no say in what the government is doing. And since you mentioned in your beginning, like, agriculture is the leg on which Africa stands, I would like to know what your program is doing to stop that, and how is Africa going to be able to move forward if those countries are coming in to buy the land that the people should be using for their own benefit. Thank you.
All right, one more front middle here.
Tim Docking, IBM. Thank you for your presentation. This is a very timely event with the Secretary of State in Africa this week, and the administration trying to identify its Africa agenda. The one thing we hear coming up again and again is agricultural initiative. And so I'm wondering if you can shed light from your perspective, what are your expectations on the United States right now? Clearly this cause has become a global cause right now, food security in Africa with the G8 and all the talk about that. Do you expect the United States to step up and lead this like we did on the AIDS program a few years ago? And do you expect a few years down the road that who will have such a prominent position to fight this fight. And perhaps, Joanne, perhaps you can shed some light on what's going on the Hill here. What support do you see around this with legislation, and inform us a little bit on that point? Thank you.
All the easy questions. So genetically modified foods, land grabs, and U.S. leadership. I'm sorry? Right, agribusiness, multinationals.
Yeah, okay. These are all very good questions, again. And agribusiness is very key. If you, I think in my discussion, I did talk about linking production to markets, you know, which I think is very important, because I personally feel that the only way that we can improve the well-being of the farmer is to improve their income, to increase their income. But I feel that Africa should add value to its product. And I feel that what is happening today in Nigeria with regards to cassava, where we try to add value even at the farm gate, you know, to produce flour of cassava and other products of cassava that gets to the supermarket, should be emulated, you know, across Africa. And when we talk of agribusiness, it's not the big-time agricultural businesses, but also we should look at the medium, small business sectors, you know, and then try to help them. But, of course, Africa do need support to be able to promote this issue. And I think that some governments are beginning to give that support. Notably, Ghana is promoting this in Africa. And again, if you look at what has happened in the last few years, 3, 4, 5 years, in which we see African products being flown overnight, you know, from a destination in Africa, from a place in Africa, you know, to a destination in Europe. You know, our flowers is one of them, and it's turning the peasant farmers, subsistence farmers of yesterday to become big-time farmers of today, you know, in some East African countries and in South Africa as well. You know, so like I said, if we are able to define and determine our niche products, you know, and determine which one should go for exports, which one should, we should add value and sell to our supermarket, we need to promote this particular sector. And I think that AGRA, the Alliance for a Green Revolution in Africa, apart from looking at issues related to seed systems and to irrigation, you know, I mentioned that they are promoting a model that will bring credit to farmers. And most of the farmers that are taking the credit, some of them that are taking the credits, are putting it into agribusiness, you know, to add value to the product, you know, at the farm gate. And I think that there's a special effort, you know, to identify such farmers and to support them, you know, of course, so that they could promote, they will promote this particular area, which is of interest to all of us. With regards to the GM products, yes, it is an issue that is being hotly debated in Africa today, and it's a question that came up again, you know, in my morning session with the task force of CSIS, and again, I feel that GM, genetically modified product, is a must for Africa, and I think that we're beginning to see expansion of utilization of the biotechnology tools, expansion of utilization of GM products in a number of few countries, but it is expanding in those countries, and in, I believe that it will not be too long before other countries, you know, pick up this technology as well. I think that in some countries where it's not being promoted or utilized, it's the fact that it's a fear that it might be harmful to human beings, you know. And so the approach that we are taking at FARA is that we should get all parties for and against together, and together we should move out there to carry out surveys from time to time to look at the potential benefits that we're getting out of GM products, and to see if there are any risks that are associated to it, and of course to make this known to everybody. being a breeder myself and somebody, a geneticist, somebody who worked on using modest biotechnology tools, I see a lot of value, you know, in going for GM crop, and I do not share the view that some leaders would neglect GM product when their people are dying of hunger. You know, so yes, I think that generally in Africa it's a must, but we should allow country to take decision as to whether they want to bring in GM products or not. And those countries that want to bring it in to support it, we will give all our support to those countries. Those countries that say no, we will try to see how we can convince them to see the benefits that the other countries are getting, you know, so that they will go for it. So it is a plus and a must, we believe, for Africa. You know, the Green Revolution bypassed Africa in the late 60s and 70s. We do not want the Gene Revolution to bypass Africa by not adopting this particular methodology that we believe is very crucial to improve level of resistance to stresses, very crucial to increasing yields of our products, you know. So I personally think that it's a must. The second question is related to multinational cooperation. Where is it? Land purchasing and the issue of land purchasing. That's quite interesting. I can tell that the way that you talked about this with passion, that you probably come in from one of the countries that that is being affected by this. And I think that it is sad that our government should allow institutions or financiers to come in and give some money to the government and then they take a huge chunk of land. And this is why I always say that it's probably nice to work with the devil that you know. You know, we have done business with a number of countries in the West for long. They've come, they've looked at our system, they've worked within our system. I do not believe that you should go and displace 20,000 farmers, for example, take a huge chunk of land, bring your own people, work on the land, and then eventually take the products to your own country. I think it is wrong. And I think that we have discussed this even at the EU level, and this is something that is going to go into the Heads of State Summit in the not too distant future, you know, for them to come to take a stand on this. Of course, we do know that a number of countries have adopted this system, you know, but we think that it is wrong. We brought it up to NEPAD. NEPAD brought it up to the AU. AU is considering a resolution against this that will go into one of their into one of the Heads of State Summit. You know, I will go for a system where you have 20,000 farmers, you come with your resources, you organize the farmers, they produce, they get their benefits, they sell their product to you, you buy the product. It's a win-win situation. And this is what we've been doing with the U.S. for long. The U.S. has been supporting agricultural products in Africa. And I believe that that was what that's the approach that we've taken to such kind of collaboration, a collaboration where everybody benefits, a collaboration where the people in the community benefits, and we improve the well-being of those people. I can give several examples of such success stories, you know, and we are totally against this approach of buying land and taking the product to elsewhere, you know, without the people benefiting. And I think that these have been raised in appropriate quarters. And I think that in the not too distant future, like I mentioned earlier on, the heads of states themselves will be looking into this. They'll fight it out amongst themselves because some heads of state are in support, others are not in support of this approach, you know, to collaboration. And then
last question, U.S. leadership.
And, U.S. leadership. That is quite interesting. I think that U.S. have taken leadership for a long time in promoting agricultural research ventures, in promoting collaboration, at higher education level. We did talk about one of these for Njala University. You know, and I think that U.S. should continue to take that leadership. I think that the L'Aquila resolution was based on the leadership from the USA, you know, and President Obama demonstrated that by declaring its support, you know, for countries that have got good governance, you know, and declaring even to the extent of giving value, you know, to some of the support, you know, to promote food security in Africa. So we feel that the U.S. should continue to take the lead, you know, to advocate for such outcomes, you know, that will promote agricultural development, promote food security, improve well-being of the people. And the U.S. can talk to countries at government level, at presidential level, at prime minister level, and they should take that leadership, you know, to continue to give that advocacy, on top of the fact that they should continue to support capacity strengthening in Africa. They should continue to support opening up of corridors for trade, you know, in Africa. They should continue to support infrastructural development, communication, road network, ICT, you know, and all of these things to improve the competitiveness of our agriculture. They should continue to give that kind of support. So yes, I see the U.S., my own judgment, playing that leadership role. What I will do is to appeal to all of you to make sure that the U.S. don't back out of that leadership role. Thank you.
That's a good closing comment. Tim, I think we're running out of time, so maybe we can talk afterwards. But I think that one of the things that we have been talking about a lot is how you sustain this massive investment, how you make it work, how you make it effective, how you have some early wins so that the U.S. doesn't sort of go down the path and eventually sort of fall away. Mm-hmm. But with that, we're out of time, but we want to thank you for your time this afternoon. Thank you to your family for sharing you with us on your vacation, and thank you all for coming.